Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Great to have you along on the program today. Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Ted Roth at the controls. Chris is at the phones. And the phones are open for the hour today as our guests in studio are here to answer your questions as it relates to estate planning, wills, trusts, charitable giving, any of those kinds of things. You know, we just talking before the program, my guests Kirby Stahl and Paul Stein, and Paul was saying, you know, often what he does in his work is periodic reviews with clients, and they're sort of little nudges about things, steps that we need to take to, you know, make sure that we've got a plan in place. And so today's program perhaps will just, for you, be a little nudge. And if there's some specific things that you want to get some answers to, I want to invite you to just join in the conversation. And you can do that with a phone call at 877-933-2484. We get together with Kirby and Paul from time to time, periodically here on Connecting Faith, just to talk about the very issue of inheritance and legacy and estate planning. Kirby Stahl is a senior director for advancement services at the University of Northwestern, and he's vice president of the Northwestern Foundation. And Paul Stein is a certified financial planner with more than 25 years of experience and founder and president of Advanced Retirement Resources. And they are good friends of this ministry and glad to have you back. Kirby and Paul, good to see you again.
Thank you, Neil. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Neil.
All right. We want to talk as we do kind of each time we get together. I mean, who knows where it goes? And it will be maybe based on questions that you have about some concerns about your estate plan or whatever it might be. But we want to start with today, maybe just a few basics and maybe some errors and myths. But before that, there's a verse in Proverbs 13:22. It says, "A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children." Now, well, let's just start with the verse of Scripture. What can we learn from that?
Neil, I think about the Proverbs and all the wisdom they impart. And, you know, this particular verse, inheritance to his children's children, just makes me think of my parents, my grandparents, and just all that was imparted to me and that legacy that's passed along. And inheritance sometimes means money. Sometimes it means values. And all I know is that I have godly parents and godly grandparents, and I've received a lot.
Yeah, I think it's it's sobering to think that whatever we do, good or bad, has an impact on probably more than just one generation. And very often, yeah, a couple generations, and that certainly is biblical. So that's good, but also, should get our attention and help us think about what is really important and what are we leaving behind and what the impact that has for generations.
Fact is that we will leave it behind, right? That's the old joke. Was it Rockefeller's accountant, right, asked at his funeral, how much did John leave? He said, well, I left all of it. You know, that's the reality.
Yeah.
So, but where it goes and how it gets dispersed, that's what we want to talk about. Maybe one of the common errors that we have is that we think, well, my estate will just pass on to my family even without a plan. Is that true? And what actually will happen if we don't have a plan or haven't done any sort of provisions?
Well, a number of things come into play. So it depends on what the asset is and how it's titled and what ultimately will happen. And I guess a good exercise for every person is to kind of do a what-if scenario and just, you know, either with, you know, on your own or with the help of an attorney or a financial planner, look at, okay, what if I didn't do anything, just with everything the way it is now, what's going to go where and to whom and when and how is that going to happen? And a lot of times that's the first place to start, is to see, you know, if you died next week, if you got hit by a bus, where does everything go? And then you can start determining, is that really what you'd want to happen? You know, it is interesting that someone like Prince, you know, we'd think when they've amassed a lot of wealth and they have advisors, hopefully looking out for them. And then, you know, you come and that's in Prince isn't the first person with earthly wealth that you then didn't plan on dying, died. And then the planning hadn't been done. And you can catch then some of the ramifications of that in the news, what that involves when there was no plan.
Well, and the truth is, it's going to pass. Somebody will be able to figure this out. But again, it gets down to that planning. And the intentions that you had might not be exactly what happens.
Hmm. And it gets me, that's one of the things, too. We need to realize that, where does it go? We need to think about what we have, because we probably, there's property of some sort. There's, probably insurance. There's, retirement accounts. Any number of things. We probably need to make some time to put that all together and have it in a place where we can find it.
Well, we could, review a little bit. A lot of times people think of their will as kind of their estate plan. And that is one of the parts of your estate plan. But just to clarify what your will does, your will is really your instructions to the probate court. And so then it's like, well, what's the probate? And the probate is the formal process to determine who should get what's left behind. But there are things that don't go through probate. Like if you own something jointly with someone else, joint with right of survivorship. But that's a mini estate plan. If one joint owner dies, it just automatically flows to the surviving joint owner. So that doesn't have to go through probate. Anything where you've named a beneficiary on a beneficiary line, if you put somebody's name down on a beneficiary line, that would be like life insurance, retirement plans. But if you put someone's name on a beneficiary line, then it goes to that person, and that's not part of the probate estate. It doesn't go through probate because it was clear where it goes. So sometimes people think they've taken care of things in their will, but their will only is instructions to those things, those assets that are going to go through probate. So that can help clarify when there's a conflict. Somebody does their will and they forget to change a beneficiary. It might be in the form of a first marriage or a second marriage, but let's say I just talked to the adult child of a client this last week, and their IRAs were still, the beneficiary in their IRAs was their parents. And here now she was married, and that would, if she passed away, even without a will, that would go to her parents because that's whose name was on the beneficiary line.
You mentioned a joint ownership. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, are there pluses or minuses to that in terms of estate planning?
I think sometimes it's a matter of convenience. You go and you sign up an account at a bank or with your financial advisor or on your car. Sometimes having both parties there is not always practical. But in the case of who should get this asset if one of the two of you were to pass, I think it's critical that you have both the husband and wife on a joint account. And, of course, there are ways to have other owners on an account with someone, too, whether it's a parent, child, or those types of things.
Yeah, that usually is a convenient way to title assets for married couples. And then if something happens to one spouse, it's very, very convenient. The control issues don't change. You can even delay in going in and even removing the deceased spouse from the account. Sometimes people misuse and abuse that. A lot of times with aging parents, or sometimes where a widow or widower, they think, okay, well, I'm going to just put my kids on accounts. That way it can avoid probate. But then that brings in some other risks, and I guess that's just a point to probably make here is, there's two sides to most every coin. Mm. So, usually there aren't perfect plans. So anything you change, you just have to be real clear what does it accomplish and then what problems does it potentially create. So you're making wise decisions. But that can expose assets to liabilities of, let's say, children. You add their name to an adjoint account, and sometimes it's not a matter of trust, but sometimes it can be sometimes bad things happen to good people that are outside their control. It can be a bankruptcy or divorce, and so you're exposing that asset to whoever's name you add as a joint owner. So you got to be careful.
And say a bit about the beneficiaries as well, in terms of who do we are there standard advice or recommendations in terms of, you know, whose name goes in there, or do we not actually, put an individual's name? Do we set up a trust or something? So in terms of passing assets along using a beneficiary.
I would say that if the asset can have a beneficiary attached to it, which most assets these days in the state of Minnesota and other states as well can pass by beneficiary, even homes, that there is a certain logic to it, that maybe it is your surviving spouse, or maybe it is your children, or maybe it's a, you know, maybe you want to spread that around and pass it along to another friend. But I would say that if it can have that beneficiary on it, the asset, that you should just pay attention to that and keep those up to date, and again, make sure that you're not leaving out those who are dearest to you.
I think an important question to ask yourself when you're thinking about putting someone's name on a beneficiary line is how is it okay for this person to receive this asset outright? So if you think about that, for example, let's say very commonly people will name minor children. They'll name their spouse very commonly as the primary beneficiary, and then they just automatically name their children as contingent beneficiaries. So if you ask that question, well, okay, so if let's say my spouse and I die in a common accident, and now this, whatever I'm naming, if it's life insurance, IRAs, but, you know, it might be large amounts, you know, is that how... Is that the way I want it, for that to go to this beneficiary, this minor child, outright? Because if they're just simply named as a beneficiary, minors, of course, can't legally own assets, can't legally own something. So if that is the case, which is very common, then that requires a conservatorship, where the court would appoint someone to watch that asset for that minor until they are an adult, which is 18. In most states.
Good insight to today. We're going to take a quick break and come back, and would love to have you join in the conversation. Maybe just what you've heard today has prompted a question or two. We're talking wills, estate planning. We'll get into some of the other basic documents that we all should have. We'll talk a little bit about trusts. Charitable giving, want to discuss that as well. But you might have some questions about retirement planning as well. You're welcome to join the conversation. Here's the phone number. It's 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Or if you want to just set your question in writing, if you go to the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com, you'll find an email link there. Just fill in your question there and send that along, and it'll come right to the studio. And so we'll talk about it here in the moments ahead. Talking today with Paul Stein, certified financial planner, founder and president of Advanced Retirement Resources. They exist to help individuals identify and work toward their ultimate financial goals through highly personalized financial planning and wealth management. Kirby Stahl is a senior director for advancement services at University of Northwestern St. Paul and vice president of the Northwestern Foundation. The foundation is... facilitates the transfer of planned gifts that benefit Northwestern and projects as well as other charities. So we'll get more of your questions answered in the moments ahead. Again, you can join us now with a call at 877-93-FAITH. Talking about legacy, and that involves, what gets passed on. Now, we mentioned just earlier right at the outset of the program that, that may be financial, but it could also be wisdom and values, and we'll talk a little bit about that as well. Kirby Stahl is the vice president of the Northwestern Foundation and senior director for advancement services at the University of Northwestern St. Paul. And Paul Stein is founder and president of Advanced Retirement Resources, certified financial planner, more than 25 years' experience, and they're regular guests here on Connecting Faith, at least, every quarter or so, when we simply talk about, legacy and planning and what that looks like. And so we've talked a bit about, wills and about the joint ownership and beneficiary designations. You know, just one. And by the way, our phone number is 877-93-FAITH. So if you have a question, we'd love to have you join the conversation. But, you know, maybe one of the things we should wonder about is this an error if we leave everything to our spouse? Is that just the simplest, or you know, do we want to make it a little more robust than that?
Neil, I'm a planner, and so yeah. I really like to do my best to make the plans. Of course, we know who ordains our steps, yeah. too. So all of these scriptural biblical passages we could pull up. But I do think it's kind of like this, you know, when I was growing up, we read these choose your own adventure books and, you know, turn to page 54 and see what happens next. It's like how much of a mystery do you want the settlement of your estate or your assets to be? We even talked at the break about what if. Well, how many what if scenarios could you think about to say, what if my spouse inherited everything, or what if my children inherited less or nothing, or all these types of things? There are just so many different paths you could take.
Yeah, and I guess that maybe brings up, Paul, we should probably address it. I know earlier Bill Arnold took a call this week from someone who's concerned about in a blended family, you know, that's going to take a little more extensive estate plan, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's more and more common in yeah. our world, you know. Yeah. I mean, that you look at the percentages and many, there's more and more blended families. Yeah. So, and every blended family is going to have its unique differences. So I guess, you know, to try and have something meaningful.
You're not going to give us a one-size-fits-all here, Paul?
No, well, yeah, okay. you could, but simple is rarely best.
Yeah, okay.
And so I think the best advice that we could give is that if someone either is looking at starting a blended family, you know, mm-hmm. if they're at the point where they're not married yet and it's going to be a blended family, or if it already is a blended family, it just is that much more important to do some planning. And because with no planning in a blended family situation, the chance of it not being the way you would have wanted it to be is just magnified because of the complexities of the family. So it's just, you know, I can't encourage people enough to do some planning.
Because if we leave it to the state to decide or courts, I mean, that they won't necessarily decide in the way that we probably would have preferred, right?
Yeah, and I'll admit that I don't know all the ins and outs, but the state of Minnesota, for example, probate process has a logical process that they would go through, whether it's you and then your spouse and then your children and then your grandchildren, and you know, where does it end? And again, as Paul brings up, the complexities when it comes to blended families just gets, again, magnified. So.
Yeah, and it's your opportunity to think through it and think through what you do want, and then take steps to make sure that happens. I mean, it's just, yeah. Good stewardship.
Let's take a call line two, because this certainly relates to our conversation. Jamie is calling in from Moundsview. You're on with Paul and Kirby. Go ahead with your question.
Yes. Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Great. Great. Thanks.
Good. Good. Thank you for doing this. And I think what you guys are doing is a great thing. I have a question with regards to my situation. I was married and had an LLC and a healthcare directive. And all that, all the beneficiary things that you're talking about, figured out. Now it's gotten to be complicated with the divorce. And so now my question is, do I go back and amend the document and spend that money, or do I create a new one that will supersede the old one?
That's a good question. Any thoughts on maybe the best way to approach that?
Well, let's just maybe think through each document you typically would have one at a time. So like a power of attorney, for example, which would be a key tool to have in your estate planning toolbox. You know, if you have someone named that now you would want to name someone else, mm-hmm. you would just simply do a new document. And of course that... should be done through get some good legal advice or someone helping you. Okay. walk through that. You know, in Minnesota, there's the statutory simple power of attorney that can be downloaded from the Secretary of State website, and it's a standard form. And if you have the document that you had drafted, you know, and it's essentially the same. It was changed a couple years ago, but very minor. But you could actually replicate that, just change the person's name, and then go to the bank and have it notarized. So there are ways, if budget's a problem, you know, there are lesser expensive ways to try to get something done. But you have to be careful about when you're trying to, do things on the cheap so it gets done correctly. But so the power of attorney, though, you'd simply redo. The healthcare directive, you'd probably just redo. You know, that's not something to amend. There's not a standard format for a healthcare directive, so you can go numerous places and get a new document as long as it meets your needs and it says what you say, what you want it to say. You know, have two witnesses sign, you know, witness your signature, and you're good to go. You have a new document. The third thing would be your will. For minor changes, typically, attorneys will oftentimes just amend a will or add a codicil. You know, a slight variation to the will. It seems like in this situation, more times than not, it would just be to do a new will.
Okay. And in terms of beneficiaries, those can be changed right fairly simply, or?
Yep. You'd want to be mindful of any accounts that you have that have a beneficiary named. And in the case of a situation like this, where you go through a divorce or a death, you know, that to be mindful of beneficiaries that need to be updated. And usually you would just contact the custodian or the company, request a change of beneficiary form and go ahead and do that.
Maybe a silly question, but I was thinking that, you know, in my file cabinet just sort of gets full, you know, as accounts kind of come and go, and, you know, insurance changes. It's like, you know, it's hard to keep track of all that sometimes. And I think, well, it's not a very kind thing that I'm leaving for my kids to have to try and figure it out. Is there any, you know, good recommendations on how to solve that?
I kind of joke that if anything happens to me, my wife knows to call my financial advisor.
Okay.
However, that might not be the most appropriate thing to do, but how do you keep it organized? Yeah. I would say regular review of these documents is probably a good plan to keep things in order so that you don't have this wealth of paper and documents and you're wondering which one is most recent or most current. But as Paul said too, I think it's really good to get good counsel, whether that is legal counsel or financial advisory counsel or an accountant or a good friend. Trusted advisor, I think, is always a great place to turn. And a lot of times we have friends who can help us with these conversations.
And especially when you've gone through a difficult, like a death or divorce, where you're just maybe not is have the clarity of mind to have someone that's kind of coming alongside you and helping you through that. So you sometimes you're in a fog for a while.
Yeah.
And you need some help.
Good. All right. We're giving help today. Hopefully it's helpful to you, and you're welcome to join the conversation, talking wills, estates, estate planning, charitable giving. We'll get to annuities and some of those things coming up as well. 877-93-FAITH is our phone number, 877-933-2484. Kirby Stahl from the Northwestern Foundation, Paul Stein from Advanced Retirement Resources, my guest today in studio, and your calls are welcome at 877-93-FAITH.
Now, how I came to get this hat is very strange and funny. Grandfather died and left to me his property and money. And when the will it was read out, they told me straight and flat, if I would have his money, I must also wear his hat.
Okay. We're my guests today are looking really sharp in their hats today. Kirby Stahl, Senior Director for Advancement Services at University of Northwestern St. Paul, Vice President of the Northwestern Foundation. Paul Stein, Certified Financial Planner and the Founder and President of Advanced Retirement Resources. And we're here to take your questions today as we talk about estate planning, wills, trusts, annuities. In fact, one of our callers, Cindy, called in from Minnetonka and says, can you explain to me what annuities are? I'm looking to make some wise investments and would like more clarification on this.
Boy,
just take your hat off and you can answer it.
Well, There are all sorts of different types of annuities. It's kind of like saying, what are houses? You know, there's big houses, small houses. Sure. You know, there's all sorts of varieties. So there's a lot of different annuities, and some good, some not so good. And there are people out there that are anti-annuity, that just see nothing but bad in annuities. Some annuities can be good, can be helpful. So it kind of, I guess I would ask myself, I would encourage the listener to do her due diligence and be, and do her homework. You know, part of making educated decisions is getting educated. So, get educated, maybe from multiple sources. There are people that, want to sell annuities, and maybe that might not be the best thing for that situation. So I'd be diligent. I'd be careful. Annuities are insurance products. Generally, there are gift annuities, and Kirby can comment on that. But most people, when they think of annuities, they think of commercial annuities. There it's an insurance product, so they have some tax advantages. And then it depends on. There are immediate annuities that provide income. There are deferred annuities that allow you to defer and let that grow, the money that you put in there. And then there are different variations to those. Some are investments, where you can choose investments. Some are more just pay fixed interest. And then there's variations between there. So some are risky, just like if you were buying mutual funds, you're in the market, possibly you can be as risky or cautious as you want. You can control the allocation. Others, they just simply state an interest rate, how long they're going to pay this interest, and it's based on current interest rates. So that's the best I can do in a short summary.
That's great.
Well, and I would just say, too, that just to understand the full disclosure of that annuity that you're considering buying. What's the payout? Is there a benefit to your survivor, or is it just to you? If you wanted to get your money out of this in a hurry, could you without any surrender charges? Sometimes there's a long period of surrender or a longer period of surrender charges if you wanted to get that money back out in an emergency case. So again, just do the due diligence, like Paul said. Paul did mention gift annuities, and a lot of charities will offer gift annuities. We don't call them investments because, in fact, you give the charity the money, and that charity promises to pay you typically a fixed income for the rest of your life. And that's how I grew up learning about annuities, was an annuity is an investment or an agreement that provides income, steady, stable income for you for a period of years or the rest of your life. And on that charity side of things, again, we'd be happy to entertain any questions you have.
And there's some tax benefits, right, to give to a charity through that way. Is that right?
Absolutely. Or? And typically, any gift you make to a qualified charitable organization, whether it's an outright gift of cash or of appreciated stocks, or in this case, to create a gift plan that provides you income, there are typically tax deductions that you can take immediately. In the case of a gift annuity, much of that income that you get back is tax-free. So there are a lot of tax advantages when you consider making gifts to charities.
So an important question to ask is what's my purpose? What am I trying to accomplish with? And that's true with any investment I'm making. What do I want this investment to do for me? And because with annuities, and a lot of annuities have all sorts of different riders that provide different benefits, and like Kirby said, is there a death benefit? Is there some benefit to my survivors, either in income? But it's kind of like trusts. Sometimes people delve into all the different types of trusts and try to learn, about trusts. But I guess, before you start asking all those questions about, well, all these different types of trusts, be clear on what you're trying to accomplish. I guess we were talking earlier and beforehand, the why am I even thinking about this? What am I trying to accomplish? What do I want this money to do for me in this situation, like an annuity? And then that can help you, as you're exploring all the different features and benefits.
We're going to get back to some more listener questions in a moment, but I just, you're talking a little bit about, charitable gift annuities, it does remind me that there are maybe ways to give effectively. I know I think we've talked in the past about maybe giving to a charitable organization out of your IRA as opposed to sort of post-tax. Talk a little bit about maybe a tax benefit giving.
Sure. Well, and I might even preface that to say that, you know, there's this poem that says, only one life 'twill soon be passed. Only what's done for Christ will last. And how many of us who are followers of Christ have in our minds to be the best stewards as possible of these resources that God has entrusted to us. And so a lot of times people then wonder, well, what should I give away? And is every gift equal? You know, there are a lot of different, again, tax advantages to giving a retirement asset to a charity instead of your children. The charity doesn't pay the taxes. The children would pay the taxes. That's just a very simplistic example.
So you mentioned giving, making charitable gifts out of your IRA.
Yeah.
And for people that turn 70 and a half, that is a lifetime opportunity where one can give, make charitable contributions out of your IRA. That's only after you're 70 and a half. But a lot of our retired clients that can provide some real benefits. It potentially might reduce the amount of taxes you pay on your Social Security benefits, or maybe avoid it altogether. It also might provide some benefits if someone no longer has enough deductions outside of their charitable deductions, they might not have mortgage interest anymore. And so if they're taking a standard deduction, that can be beneficial then to make their charitable contributions out of the IRA. So there's some potential for clients over 70 and a half to do some charitable things with their IRAs.
Let's maybe respond to this listener who wished to remain anonymous, but said, I'm in the unfortunate situation of being separated now, and it will most likely lead to divorce. Just want to know what the next steps are financially. We're both retired now. You're not doing marriage counseling, but I don't know, are there some, it's from a financial standpoint, are there one or two things you just recommend?
Steps? Well, again, I would point back to the idea of getting, finding a trusted advisor. Mm. Or a friend who can sit alongside you and help you sort through some of the details with this. I'm guessing that at some point there will be a division of assets, and this person will actually know what is theirs and how much is theirs. But I would highly recommend finding a trusted advisor to sit with and help you sort through those things.
Yeah, and friends in difficult times can be a wonderful blessing. But I would say a word of caution about getting financial advice sometimes from friends that or family members that have good intentions. It's just like health advice, you know. I mean, there's still that, you know, want people that love you and care for you, watching out for you, and being your advocate, but. But, you know, you maybe want to go to the doctor.
That home remedy is not working. Is that what you're telling me, Paul? Okay. I thought it was a great idea.
Follow up on that, there are financial planners that specialize in divorce and the issues that go along with that. And they're very that additional specialization. Yeah. It's just like going to, you don't want to go to your family physician if you need knee replacement, you know. Yeah. So if the listener wanted to email me, I can refer her to someone that I know does very good work in that area. And sometimes getting advice early is helpful because sometimes the more savvy spouse can be doing things that's self-serving and detrimental to the other spouse. And so it would be important to at least have somebody that's looking out for this person.
If you want to connect with Paul, info@advancedretirement.com, info@advancedretirement.com. Let's take a question from Mark calling in from Hartford. Thanks for calling, Mark. And he says, my brother and I own two rental properties. My brother's name is on the deed of one of them. The other, his name is not. When making my will, how will that work out to be divided evenly among our family members?
Hmm. Well, it goes back to you know, what goes through probate and what doesn't. So if from the sounds of it, from what we know, if the one property where both of their names are listed, if it is joint with right of survivorship, and that depends on if it's a community property state or not, but we don't, with what we know, if if both names are on the deed and one owner dies, it's just automatically going to go to their surviving owner. So whatever they put in their will won't help in that situation. If we understand it right, the brother's name is not on the one property, yeah. So that means it's solely in this person's name, then what they say in the will could control how that property is distributed, because if the person's name is the only person on that property and they die, then that's a probate asset. So then the will can give some instruction on what to do with it.
And I would say, too, that in the case where multiple family members are owning property together, that this might be a good example where the will may not be the tool to carry this on, that you might want to consider, again, talking to an attorney, thinking about a trust that could hold title to this asset so that your respective families can inherit their portion of it.
Because you're definitely going to have some conversation about this, aren't you?
Yep. If the desire is for each of the brothers, for their families to benefit from the property, Kirby's point is very well taken, especially if they live in different states, potentially, that property would be, ideally you'd probably have those properties in separate LLCs, and have that distributed via a trust. But now we're getting deep in the weeds.
We're getting deep in the weeds. Well, we're going to come up for air, take a quick break, and then return. We have a question about, allocating, leaving an inheritance to our children. What if it's not the best relationship with our children, or one or two? We'll let Kirby and Paul weigh in on that sticky question. Kirby Stahl is the Vice President of the Northwestern Foundation, Senior Director for Advancement Services at the University of Northwestern St. Paul, and Paul Stein, Certified Financial Planner, more than 25 years of experience, and Founder and President of Advanced Retirement Resources. By the way, you want to find out more, maybe connect with Kirby, find out about the good work of the foundation, Northwestern Foundation, you can go to the website unwsp.edu, stands for the University of Northwestern St. Paul, unwsp.edu, to find out connection for the foundation there. And if you have some questions for Paul, maybe you just want to get a referral or more information, you can connect with him, info@advancedretirement.com, info@advancedretirement.com. More with Kirby and Paul in just a moment. Inheritance we have, right? Kept in heaven for us, right? Peter talked about that. Well, we're talking about how we pass on our earthly inheritance and leave a legacy. Proverbs 13:22, we started the program with that. A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. Talking about estate planning, legacy, some of those things today with Kirby Stahl and Paul Stein. And Beth called in from Madison and just asked if we could address this question. She said, you mentioned the Proverbs about leaving an inheritance. My question is, if my child won't allow me in her life at this point, biblically, do I still honor her with leaving that inheritance? She's been estranged from her daughter for 7 years.
Hmm. Well, that's a interesting question. A lot of times we talk about children honoring parents.
Yeah.
But here we have this case. And, of course, I'm the father of six children right now and just think I'm kind of too young, I think, to be having some of these conversations or even thoughts. But it's another what if.
Yeah.
You know, what if my child were to not follow the Lord? What if my child were to do something to dishonor a parent? You know, what do you do in that case? And, boy, it's a conundrum, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think of inheritance. I think we limit our thought of inheritance if we just think of stuff, if we just think of money. So there's more to inheritance than just the tangible assets we leave behind. I think there's also that intangible inheritance that we've talked about before, you know, our faith, our values, life lessons, all those things. So I would think beyond just the tangible, the money and the stuff. Second thing is I would be mindful that people are infinitely more important than stuff. So as a believer, if my heart's desire, there's nothing more important than my kids coming to put their faith in Christ alone. So as I'm thinking about in this difficult situation, what to do, I would be mindful of, well, what can I do that would encourage my daughter, my estranged child, maybe prod them towards the Lord and not hinder that. So it might be including them in, you know, with some financial part of the inheritance and maybe in a limited way. I think in this situation, though, or situations like this, it's even the importance of communicating the why you did what you did in your estate, your heart, you know, what your heart's desire for that child. There is many times I've seen this time and time again over the years, over the decades. We have clients pass away, and there's sometimes a receptivity and a tenderness at the time when someone has died that I think of the soldier, and I didn't serve in the military, but this is my understanding, is that soldiers always write a letter to carry with them to their, it might be to their wife, it might be to their kids, it might be to mom or dad, that if they don't survive, that's what's important to them to communicate. And your estate plan, you have an opportunity like that. That's your letter. So it is important to have the legal documents drafted, but I think, like in this situation, to think beyond that. So it, even to write out, or record, but to include in to your daughter, all your wishes and your heart's desires and what you want for, you know, and your grief over being estranged, you know, but it's another chance to try to communicate, try to encourage that person, to draw them closer to the Lord and not away from the Lord.
It is one thing to consider too, that if there are other children involved here, the statement it makes when, you pass away and if three of the four children inherit something, you know, how is that going to affect the relationships of those who come after you? And just something to consider, too, how your children are going to be able to get along after.
I think it's always the question, I guess, how much do we leave to our children? It doesn't have to be the same number for each one, right?
Yeah, I mean, I have some relationships where families, children are doing just great. They're well off. They don't need any of this inheritance. So why leave them some? You know, that's kind of the question that we get every once in a while. But again, it goes back to what Paul just said, too, that it's leaving more than the stuff. But potentially this could be an opportunity for you to entrust something to your children to encourage them to do what you've been doing for years, supporting ministries, supporting the work that God's doing through your church or through other Christian ministries, and trying to pass along that legacy of generosity and to carrying on what you started.
Yeah, I think it's important to consider need of the children. One of the children might not have, they might be affluent and doing just fine. Another child might have great financial needs. So at least to consider that, you know, do you want to give more to where it's needed? I think the other thing, or another thing to consider, is the maturity and where the children are at. You know, some children might be better stewards with gifts, and others might be very, very frivolous with it. So to consider that, you know, some people do just do it the same, you know, but same is simple. But as we previously mentioned, is, you know, simple isn't always best. Yeah. And so to think through that. But I think whatever you do, it's an opportunity to communicate the why you did it. So if you didn't do it all the same, I think it's really important to communicate in your estate planning, you know, in the form of a personal letter, letters to each of the kids, or to, if appropriate, communicate that beforehand, before you die. I mean, sit down with your kids and say, you know, here's what we've done in our estate planning, and here's why we did it, and we love each of you. You know, we love you equally, but we didn't do it just the same, and here's why. So you're communicating your heart. If somebody doesn't want to disclose that amount, you know, while you're still living, then do it in written form. But there's something really value about about doing it in person while you're able to communicate those things. But those issues of the heart and the why you did it, I think, are really important, because sometimes children can assume the worst. You know, they got less, and they just assume that, okay, they were loved less, or, you know, they did something wrong. So I think it's important to communicate the why.
And I think, too, it's going back to that whole life stewardship mentality, that everything we have is from God. If we can lead by example while we're living, especially with our children, to let them know how important it is to live with your hands wide open, that you live selflessly, you live generously. Boy, that's what the next generation needs.
In fact, we were just talking about that before the program. We had a copy of John Piper's book there. That, I mean, you know, we were thinking about passing on a legacy, but we, you know, as long as we're alive, we have the opportunity to be good stewards as well, right? Not just wait and sort of pass it all on to the kids.
Yeah, and I would say that sometimes there's that mentality of you save up, you invest well, so that someday you can retire and enjoy what you've earned or saved or accumulated. And that's just that's a mindset that is completely opposite from what I believe God wants us to be doing.
Well, and God, you know, gives us many things to enjoy, but to you know, to begin with the end in mind. You know, if you think about, okay, when I'm reflecting, you know, when I'm in my last days or last moments, and I look back on how I spent my life, spent my time, spent my resources, hopefully I did it in a way where I have minimal regrets. So if all I did was the fun stuff and did little for eternity, I feel like if we have any understanding of what God's done for us, we'll probably have regrets.
You know, the listener that has some concerns, anonymous listener, said she's at this point doesn't really trust her husband, wants some advice on what possible next steps are. But it just reminds me that we've only got a couple of minutes left. But finding a trusted advisor, that is really invaluable, isn't it? Whether it's, you know, financial or spiritual or whatever it might be.
Yeah. And I don't know all the ins and outs of this conversation and this situation, but I think that certain of us in a marriage relationship know more about what's going on financially in our households than others. And so how much do we defer to the other one and just trust that they are taking care of everything? I think it'd be good to sit down and try to have those conversations to get on the same page.
Yeah, and that's not all that uncommon where trust is broken. You know, sometimes we've done something where we've broken the trust of someone else, and that's hard to restore. So probably it would be very helpful to get help in that situation, you know, outside of the financial mm-hmm. part, you know, from, you know, pastoral counseling, marriage counseling, you know, to try, you know, try to restore trust. The other thing, though, is if one spouse is vulnerable, you know, like Kirby mentioned, if one spouse is in the know and the other spouse doesn't know what's going on and there's broken trust, that spouse is in a vulnerable situation. And so then that spouse should get some help. And if it's financial related, from a financial planner or from an attorney or someone that would represent the vulnerable person's interests.
Yeah. And again, too, when you're looking for a financial advisor, I mean, just ask questions, right? Get recommendations and do your diligence there, too. Right?
Yeah. Kirby's a good resource.
Okay.
And so is Paul.
All right. Well, listen, if you want to connect with Kirby or Paul, you can connect with Kirby by going to the website. Kirby is the vice president of the Northwestern Foundation. You find him at unwsp.edu. And if you want to connect with Paul, who is a certified financial planner and founder and president of Advanced Retirement Resources, you can go to info@advancedretirement.com. info@advancedretirement.com. Kirby and Paul, blessings to you guys. Thank you for coming in again today.
Thanks, Neil.
Thank you, Neil.
If you missed part of today's show, maybe want to review it, pass it on to a friend. You'll find the interview posted on our website, the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. It's myfaithradio.com. Click on Connecting Faith. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about sacred pathways. Discover your soul's path to God. Looking forward to a great conversation with Gary Thomas. Hope that you'll join us then here on Connecting Faith. Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. And you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.